Our first speaker is one of the longest and strongest supporters of Wisconsin Family Impact Seminars, Dr. Tom Corbett. Dr. Corbett is the Associate Director and former Acting Director of the Institute for Research on Poverty here on UW-Madison campus. He's presently serving as a member of the National Research Council's panel on measuring the effects of changes in social welfare programs. He's a member of the Coordinating Committee of the National Research Forum on Children, Families, and the New Federalism at Columbia. He served as a member of the National Advisory Board for the New Hope Project in Milwaukee. Previously, he spent a year in Washington, D.C. in the Department of Health and Human Services, helping develop national welfare reform. He gives presentations all over the country. In fact, Tom, I counted the last 3 years, you've given over 100 presentations, primarily on welfare reform, evaluation, and innovative welfare programs and practices. He's a recipient of many grants to carry out the many research dissemination projects he's involved in. He's written many papers and reports, and in all honesty, Tom, I think you are the best writer I know. And not only is his writing fluent, but it has good ideas in it. Really interesting. Really visionary, cutting-edge ideas. And I think you'll agree when you read his chapter in the briefing report and hear his presentation today. It's summarizing his work with the Welfare Peer Assistance Network, WellPAN. He's been meeting with senior welfare administrators from the 7 upper Midwest states since 1996 to discuss the complex policy and administrative issues that are involved with implementing welfare reform. He's also organized with some of his colleagues the County to County Connections Project. He's using satellite technology to downlink innovative welfare programs to county welfare officials all over the country. So, you know, I always try to tell you one personal thing about my speakers, and I asked Tom about something personal, and he said, I really have a very boring life. And then I saw something that reminded me of Tom in the Spring Green grocery store. Imagine this. And I brought it along. Okay. It's Corbett's Canyon Wine. Spelled C-O-R-B-E-T-T, just like Corbett. So I've got one question for you today, Tom. I know that you are in the business of distilling good ideas over at the Institute for Research on Poverty. But what I want to know, do you also distill good spirits? It's my pleasure to introduce you, Dr. Tom, the very good-spirited Dr. Tom Corbett. His topic today is From Income Support to Child and Family Support, Some Rather Surprising Consequences of National Welfare Reform.
I literally quake when Karen has introduced me. She called me, I talked with her yesterday, and she said, you know, I'm trying to come up with some way to make you sound human, and I'm having trouble. This was it. I know she always does a great job of making me sound like an expert, but I really learned that an expert is someone who flies across state lines to give a presentation. And in the last couple of weeks, I think I've been in Cleveland, New York, Washington twice, Twin Cities. And in those places, I was an expert. But here, I'm just Tom, you know, sharing some of my observations. In fact, I got back late the other night, and the dog bit me, thinking that I was a stranger breaking into the house. I also want to waste a little bit of my time to embarrass Karen a bit. A decade, I'm going to use it anyway. A decade ago, Theodore Ooms was, who created the Family Impact Seminar concept in Washington, was trying to get some of the states to adopt it, and she came to Wisconsin, and Karen got involved, and Theodore said, well, you know, we were hoping someone from the Institute would do this because of the Institute's name and so on and so forth. You fast forward 10 years, and when Theodore was getting out of the business and turning over the Family Impact Seminar effort to someone else, he turned it over to Karen. So these are perhaps the best run and best developed state Family Impact Seminars in the country. And I think she should be commended for that. Okay, now to the substance. I'm going to just really make one big point, and essentially is that in terms of the institutional changes in welfare agencies, we may be moving back to a better connection with family and children. I'm not saying this is a done deal, but I'm going to use the kinds of observations and the kinds of contacts that I've had with state administrators and in some cases local administrators to pursue whether or not that's perhaps a reasonable trend that we've been going in. And I'm going to start doing this with a little history sort of lesson, hopefully very brief. Basically to sort of get us around the myth that there was no welfare in the United States. And in 1935, FDR created the welfare state. We had that welfare state for 60 years. And in 1996, with national welfare reform, we ended that and went to something else. In fact, welfare and welfare for poor families with children has been a constantly moving target. And let me move through some of those targets very quickly with you. We started out really in the last century by giving money to mothers to sort of support them in that caretaker role. And the idea was, instead of putting kids in orphanages or farming them out to farms in the Midwest, we would enable mothers to raise their children with adequate support. Now, these were not well-run programs, but that was the goal. And when AFDC was started, or ADC was started in the 1930s, same principle, to keep the mothers in that caretaking role. By the 1960s, and there was a lot of morality, there was a lot of individual attention given to those cases. We went in and we used to check on their education and their parenting skills and all those kinds of things. In the 1960s, we began to worry about dependency, and we tried a number of different kind of techniques to deal with it. Welfare, as we came to know it, really developed in the late 1960s, early 1970s. That's when it became an entitlement. And really, there were sort of a couple of principles that really dominated. One was target efficiency, that is, getting benefits to the poorest of the poor. And that created all kinds of incentives that we didn't like, which I don't have time to go into now. And the other one was efficiency and accountability. You wanted to get those checks out accurately and quickly. Essentially, that drove the culture of these institutions in the direction of being information processors. So you didn't deal with the family anymore. You didn't deal with the issues of the children. You really dealt with, how can I process information to get that check out the door accurately and efficiently? In the last two decades, arguably, we've been adding back in, slowly at first and then more quickly, a lot of family and child, family stability and child rearing goals back into welfare. And I think they were on the verge of going back to the original purposes of sort of saving the children again. So, at least in some places. So let's pursue that proposition. A bit more. Seems to me that you can talk about things like time limits and sanctions and increased work obligations as part of PRORA. But I like to think of the new direction of reform in terms of the four R's, which is redirection, reallocation, reinvention, and rededication. And let me give you both. Rededication is a shift from this income support function to sort of making behavioral changes in the family. And let me just give you some quotes. One of the guiding forces behind our mission in the state of Illinois is to bring families together. The issues that are brought up have a lot to do with parenting, educating your child, doing what's best for the whole family as well as the individual child, making sure your child has shots, making sure you take care of yourself, making sure you seek all the benefits that you are entitled to. Reallocation means essentially devolving responsibility for these programs, not just to the states, but then to the local governments and even to the frontline workers. The first quote was from Illinois, obviously. The second one is from Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin did one thing up front. We designed a game plan for how our new welfare reform process would operate that was not terribly prescriptive. And so we have 80 different agencies, 80 different models for how a job center might be envisioned. Second one on the same theme is from Colorado. In our case, in El Paso County's case, local flexibility has been absolutely critical. We are fortunate that the welfare law in Colorado gave us the maximum amount of flexibility, basically just passed down basic cash assistance eligibility and left everything else up to us. Reinvention means moving from a focus on processing the checks, processing information, to outcomes. Also reinventing how the business is done within agencies. And let me just give one quote from Minnesota. If we were going to do this reform, which was a major undertaking for us, we needed to involve as many people as possible. And to that end, we created more than a dozen committees that included staff from every department that was represented. And if you go on, there are other quotes from the same place that talk about how they involved the employer community, the faith-based community, and all the communities in a community effort to redo their welfare agency. And rededication is the fourth R. In every place that I've been, I go to the outlier agencies, time and time again, I hear people talking in an excited way about what they're doing. This one quote from Ohio: "We are a support system for the client, much more than we ever were under the old program. I think it's heightened us to where we feel much more professional about our jobs, maybe a lot more frustrated, but I think we also feel we truly have a purpose. They seem to be reinvigorated." Now, one of the themes that I keep hearing as I've gone around the country, I keep looking for models. I keep saying, "What's your model? What's your protocols? How do you do business?" Everyone keeps saying, and not everyone, but a lot of people keep saying, "We do what it takes." This is part of that repurposing theme that people are now sort of engaged again, and it's not so much the model of what they're doing. It's what they're trying to accomplish. One point that I want to make before I get back to children and families is that, unlike many of us predicted, including myself, all states are not doing the same thing. There is a lot of variation. There's no race to the bottom. And there's not actually a sort of a lemmings to the sea quality about what's happening out there either. And let me just do, I'm borrowing a table from my good friend Michael Wiseman. And we got three caseload trajectories here. And you've got Wisconsin with the biggest caseload drop. And you've got sort of Michigan, you've got the U.S. one in there. But you've also got Michigan. And you've got Minnesota with the sort of the least caseload drop. And you might say, well, Wisconsin's winning that race. But in fact, as I work with these welfare administrators from these three states, they're making simply different kinds of decisions. And caseload is not decline is not always the most important thing on their mind. Michigan is much more content, is pretty happy with using welfare as an income supplement, and they design their rules accordingly. In Minnesota, they're much more explicit about eliminating child and family poverty as sort of a state goal. And so they've designed their policies and their institutions sort of accordingly. We do see a lot of variation. And it's variation that's planned, and we don't have, in essence, one model that's developing out there. And that's particularly true when you get down to the local level, when you get down to the agency level. There's tremendous variation, and there's tremendous individualization. That's part of the professionalism that we've reintroduced into welfare administration. And I have tried to capture some of the old and some of the new attributes of the old welfare system and the new welfare system in this one simple, handy chart. Now, let me just give a quote from Minnesota again that sort of captures a lot of the old and the new. It's a really nice, succinct quote. "The old program was era-driven. Now we are employment-driven. The old program focused on paper. Now we're focused on people. The old program was barrier-based program, looking at what they, recipients, couldn't do. Now we're looking at strengths that they have and what they can do for themselves." In effect, what I think I've seen, and I've discussed this a lot with the welfare administrators and the WellPlan group that I work with in my trips travels around the country, so I think this is more than just fiction. What we're seeing is a move from a focus on benefits to a focus on behavior. From autonomous agencies, you knew where the welfare agency was, to agencies that are much more collaborative, where it's much more what we call boundary spanning. So very often you don't even, the welfare agency is sometimes hard to locate. Agencies where you had top-down communications, the rules came down, to agencies which where there's more peer-to-peer communications, workers working in teams, working across agency lines. So you have mental health staff and IOTA staff and domestic violence staff working with the case managers. Going from rule-driven agencies to agencies with a lot of professional discretion and professional choice. I actually worked in state government in Wisconsin back in the 1970s when we were moving towards the entitlement concept of welfare, and we systematically went through the manuals and took out all discretion because we were going to automate all the rules to make sure there was no latitude at the front lines. Now we're giving it all back to people at the front lines. Let me see if I can squeeze in a couple of quotes here. In the old culture, everything was eligibility oriented. The emphasis was on meeting the needs of the system, to document eligibility under the rules, not to meet the needs of the individual. We trained workers that they were not social workers. It goes on and on. New culture. I think originally, and that was a local quote from Marianne Cook, the new culture. I think originally, when we started working with clients to become self-sufficient, we focused mostly on the adults and the family. But of course, you find out that you work with them as they get jobs, that the rest of the family, where they're living and who they're living with, completely impacts their ability to succeed. So we have started looking at family assessment so that we are developing case plans for the adult in many cases. We also may be developing case plans for the children as well. In many of those cases, that would include going back to school, making sure they're staying in school, if they're younger, getting the immunizations they need, and so on and so forth. You have people that are working with the whole family. They're working in a very individualized way. They're networking. They're working across institutional boundaries. It's a completely different world. When you start to change the culture of these agencies, you get involved in what I call the 7 M's, mission, milieu, management, manpower, and I apologize for the sexism of that, but it's the only way I can make it an M, movement, measurement, and morphing. And you find agencies that are trying to change all of those, and I'm just going to pick the manpower one and give you a sense of the changes in a lot of these agencies. They've had almost 100% turnover in their staff in the last couple of years. As we did reform up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, we found that we needed a different kind of worker, those with right brain as opposed to left brain orientations. Now that means going from sort of rule-driven, process-oriented, detail-oriented, to creative people, risk-takers, entrepreneurs. Another one, while every duty has not changed, your idea of who I'm talking to and what I talk to them about is quite different than it was 5 years ago. I ask them different questions, and we talk about different things that are important in their lives, rather than, did you get your check stub into me, and so on and so forth. That's Spencer, Iowa, Kenosha, Wisconsin. In order to be a good case manager, you need to be eclectic almost. You need to have great empathy skills. You have to be able to empower versus enable clients. You have to be supportive and honest and respectful with clients. Or, when you go to Montgomery County, Dayton, Ohio, with the new system here at the Department of Human Services, our old staff have had to learn to be much more social work oriented. In the past, we had individuals who we referred to as paper shufflers. They determine eligibility. If an individual had a problem, they refer to someone else to deal with that problem. Our staff here now are having to accept responsibility of going beyond just determining eligibility, to listen to the individual and to try to be a social worker. These are massive, difficult institutional and organizational changes. Not done easily, not done everywhere. And as I sort of mentioned, in many of these places, we've seen almost 100% turnover in staff. Well, I tried to put some of the history together with the observations that I've seen happening in these local agencies. And it seems to me that we are going through a transition in basic, primary, organizational focus that has 4 tiers. We started out with income support. Now I'll borrow a quote from our own Marianne Cook, right here in Dane County. The mission of the old system was to treat everyone equally and to make sure that each applicant received all the benefits and only the benefits they were entitled to under the law. Due process, equal treatment, routine treatment. We move to a focus on job placement, and probably no one does it better than Wisconsin, so I'll use a quote from Wisconsin. The very fact that we're doing all the welfare delivery system inside a one-stop conveys the message to the applicant or the recipient that that's why they come here. They don't come here for welfare. They're coming here to get a job. And all the signage, all the letters, everything is oriented to that message. That's the signal that's sent to the community. In some places, particularly as caseloads fall, we can see a transition to work support. Placement's not enough. They have to be supported in the workplace. So we may go to Oregon. Not Oregon, Wisconsin, Oregon on the West Coast. I think what's on the horizon for us right now is a great adventure around the working clients. We're looking at how to build retention activities so they will keep their jobs, and how to use the skills they learned on their first placement to get the next better job. How can we provide those skills if the employer wants for promotion, or again, that wage enhancement piece? Another quote from a line person, that was from the assistant administrator for the state, from a line person. Once they get the job, they're still in the loop here. We never tell someone that they cannot come back and get classes that they need. They're more than welcome back to come back anytime. And we can update the resume, get them a different resume, get to a different career that they want to make, and so on and so forth. And in some places, even a smaller number, I think I see the beginnings of a movement towards either what they call family support. And let me just give some quotes that suggest this to me, at least. Again, let me first start with Colorado, get away from Oregon for a while. El Paso County, Colorado Springs. Our goal in doing this welfare reform is to take the best of what our child welfare system has to offer in terms of understanding the importance of interfamilial dynamics and the things that happen in families that affect a family's well-being and the safety of children, and link that to the best that we have in our self-sufficiency program, including the importance of getting work. We're talking about dealing with families in a very holistic and strength-based way. Going back to Oregon, if you're just looking at the employable adults, you're not looking at the whole dynamics that we set up a family for success or perhaps a failure and return to welfare. What we want to be able to do is also focus within the family on prevention. It could be that could be teen prevention programs, juvenile crime prevention, some of the adolescent risk factors, helping those kids to stay in school and stay engaged in school, and so on and so forth. Let me give you, that's the state level. Let me give you a frontline person in Oregon. This is in Portland, but she's the manager of the program. We see a real important role in prevention. We work with teens to stay in school. We also work with our partners in the community. For example, for individual kids, we look at if that kid may be spending too much time in the home caring for younger children, or maybe feeling too much pressure from whatever family crisis is going on. We may set up a plan where we look at what the interests of the child are, and whether that's art classes or swimming, and then do whatever it takes to get them to those places. So this summer, if they enjoyed swimming and needed a chance to get there, we could help them with bus tickets or a swimming suit or whatever they might need. I can go on and on with other quotes that we give sort of the same kind of story. It's hard to tell if this is just a few local examples or whether or not it's the beginning of a trend. And some of the reasons for things like WellPan, which we get, you know, sort of state administrators together to talk to one another, the county program, where we use video satellite conferences, is to try to share what we call these lighthouse agencies with other, you know, with other agencies, other administrators. Only time will tell, but we have a potential of turning the old welfare system into a true family support system, I think.